So let's continue. So any questions? So some people ask me about exactly what do I mean by quantum mechanics. And so the way how I presented quantum mechanics last time was a presentation which really parallels quantum field theory. That's why I said that quantum mechanics is quantum field theory in 0 + 1 dimensions. But then there was a question, how about Schrodinger wave function and things like that. And those questions will be answered today, because we will look at supersymmetric quantum mechanics, and we'll be writing down various Schrodinger wave functions, which will depend on coordinates, as you might expect. And okay. Any questions? No. All right, so the purpose of today's lecture would be to see the difference, which is actually, I find this lesson much more general than just supersymmetric field theories. And the lesson is that a real quantum field theory is not the same as perturbative quantum field theory. So it's completely different. And luckily for us, this toy model that we are discussing is an excellent example. So we'll get completely different answers depending how we treat it, using perturbation theory or doing it exactly. All right, so so what we said, so last time we understood the representation of the supersymmetric algebra in the context of 0 + 1 dimensional quantum field theory. And so what we would like to do is to have explicit realization of SUSY algebra. So, and in order to do that, so we will discuss here, we talk about SUSY quantum mechanics of spin 1/2 particle. So we have two states. So the wave function will have two components, right? So before I go into that, something from the last lecture, when we talk about Clifford algebra, I forgot to mention from last lecture. So the 2D Clifford algebra, which arises when we look at massive levels, A dagger equals to zero, of course have a matrix formulation, and this is something that will be useful for us. So I can think of this, and this is in particular useful when we will talk about the wave functions. So A dagger is this matrix, and A is this matrix, and you can verify just as a matrix algebra, those two provide representation of the Clifford algebra. Okay? So we talk about quantum mechanics of a spin 1/2 particle. So the wave function, okay, so this is wave function. We will have a two-component wave function, and the wave function is defined on a configuration space. So in our case, the configuration space, so normally the wave function is defined on coordinates, right, or generalized coordinates. So I kept telling you that in our model, the analog of coordinate is a field, right? So coordinate is a field, and when we talk about, so again, before we thought about them as being operators, the momentum, if we think of this as a differential operator, is del over del x. And that corresponds to a momentum minus ih bar del over del phi. And this is what we call pi, in conjugate momentum. All right, so let me just, well, I don't think I have to remind you about the maybe let's just for the it just couple seconds. So the way how we quantize the system canonically, right? So we have a system that is specified by a set of generalized coordinates and generalized momenta, and those two things are defined in such a way that the Poisson bracket on each of them equal to 1. So Poisson bracket for each A, right? So if we have several generalized coordinates, and so if we have in general, when we have two functions on a configuration space, then the Poisson bracket is just sum over A del F over del PA del G over del QA minus del F over del QA del G over del PA, right? So here we are thinking that F depends on Q, QA, PA, and G, also something that is defined on a phase space of our classical system, right? So we define, when we talk about classical system, we introduce generalized coordinates, we introduce conjugate momenta with this Poisson bracket. And so the idea of going from a classical system to quantum system is actually to replace Poisson brackets that arises in classical system with commutators. And the rule is that if we have two quantities, and we look at the Poisson bracket of them in quantum, in classical sense, we multiply it by H, and once we go to quantum mechanics, we promote it to a commutator. Okay, and so so in particular, this leads to a familiar commutation relation that Px, right? If I think of this as an operator, gives me minus I H bar. And so in a context that we are discussing, so we're talking about generalized coordinate phi and conjugate momentum pi, this will be, this will have this canonical commutation relation. So we will need this, okay, in order to do our analysis. All right, so very good. So in order, so we talk about quantum mechanics, which has a single generalized coordinate. So our wave function depend on this single generalized coordinate. Trying to find the eraser. Okay, it's not the issue now, but it will be the issue. Good. So so let's introduce. Let's introduce arbitrary function f of phi. So you can think of this that in quantum mechanics we introduce an arbitrary potential, right? When we discuss system. So in this case, it's not exactly the potential. We will see in a minute what it corresponds to, but it's just some arbitrary function. And now what I can do, I can consider the following operators. Okay. So I can introduce the operator Q, which is sigma minus, and this I have F prime of phi plus I pi. And I have Q dagger, which is sigma plus F prime of phi minus I pi. All right, so those are operators. And so I have to tell you what sigma minus is. So this is sigma x minus I sigma y. So this is just 0, 0, 1, 0, and then sigma plus is sigma minus Hermitian conjugate 0, 1, 0, 0. All right, so at this stage, we just have a quantum mechanic where we have additional function with arbitrary function f of phi defined, and I just introduce two operators, q and q dagger. All right? So, so one property of this sigma minus and sigma plus is that those two matrices, if you just do matrix multiplication, they actually square to zero, okay? And so immediately from this would follow that if I consider the anticommutator of Q, Q with itself, it will be zero, right? Because I will always have to multiply. So the way how you have to think about this, for example, so here you have this, you think of this as a matrix, differential matrix operator. So this is the operator of the type. And then you have zero and zero here. Okay? And pretty much this property guarantees you that the commutators of Q and Q dagger will vanish. And so now, if I want to realize a supersymmetry, if I want to realize a supersymmetry algebra using those operators and the canonical commutation relation there, I just define that my Hamiltonian is 1/2 anticommutator of Q and Q dagger. Okay? Of course, I would have to check after we do this. So we need to check. Need to check that the remaining commutators in SOC algebra, and those are H and Q equals to H and Q dagger equal to zero. So once we do that, then that's what I mean by supersymmetric quantum mechanics. Okay, and moreover, I wrote you the analog of the Hamiltonian as a differential operator, and so. Then we can ask what type of wave function will be an eigenfunction of this Hamiltonian and write down those wave function on a configuration space of the system. Now, the first thing is, whenever I did this, I want to claim that those statements are actually trivial always. Okay, so just to demonstrate that, I'm going to show this without even computing the Hamiltonian, and we will compute the Hamiltonian and see what it means. So let's look at this commutator. If I define the Hamiltonian as an anticommutator, so then this is this, Q dagger, comma Q. Okay. So this is 1/2 Q comma Q dagger Q plus Q Q dagger. All right. So this gives me 1/2 Q Q dagger Q plus Q squared Q dagger minus Q dagger Q squared minus Q Q dagger Q. Okay, so this is just a normal bracket. So there will be four terms, and I wrote those four terms explicitly. Now using this property, that implies that those two terms will vanish, okay, and the remaining two will cancel with itself. So I'm just saying that we already guaranteed to get a well-defined supersymmetry algebra if we define the Hamiltonian as an anticommutator of supercharges. So what we would like to do now is actually see what type of quantum mechanics we have, all right? And so let's just do the computation of this anticommutator. Right. So this will be an anti-commutator of two matrices, right? 0 f prime minus I pi, and then you have 0, 0, and then another matrix, which is 0, 0, which is just going to be complex conjugates to it, sorry, Hermitian conjugate, okay? And so we need to evaluate, we need to evaluate this. So it is a, you know, it's a straightforward thing. So there will be two parts here. The first one is f prime minus I pi coming from here multiplied in this order. I need to keep track of the order because phi and pi do not commute. They satisfy canonical commutation relation like for the position and momentum. And so the order matters. That's why when I do the matrix multiplication, I have to pick, I have to keep track of the order. So this guy will always be ahead of this. So there will be two matrices. One is this, and then there will be another one, and the other one will be this, f prime of plus I pi. Now this operator will be ahead of the other one. Okay. Now. So let's look at this quantity. Right. So when we expand the brackets, then we get f prime squared, we get pi squared, right? And then what we will get minus I pi minus I pi f prime. Now, now we have to remember that the commutator of pi and phi equals to minus I h bar, right? So I can evaluate that commutator, okay? And so the way to do it is simply expand it in a Taylor series expansion and then use this commutation relation. So minus I pi f prime will be minus I times minus I h bar coming from here. Then there will be just a second derivative of f double prime. Okay, so it's a good exercise to work it out. Again, the thing is very simple. You just expand f in Taylor series expansion and just use this canonical commutation relation. So so this is minus h bar f double prime. All right, so very good. So now we can actually write down the complete expression. 2H twice the Hamiltonian. We just have to add those matrices together, and we will get the following operator: f prime squared plus pi squared minus h bar f double prime, then there will be zeros here. So the only thing there will the sign will be different, right? Because in that case we will have plus, so that will bring it to a plus sign here, plus h bar f double prime. All right. So very good. So what do we find? We find that, remember we started defining our quantum mechanics by telling what the function f of phi is, and then we realized the supersymmetry algebra, and we found that our model will be supersymmetric with above-defined superchargers if the Hamiltonian of the system is this. All right? So you have to understand this, that this is an identity matrix, one-by-one identity matrix. And so now if you look at this, then you can see that this is a quantum mechanics of a two-state system. That's why I was telling that it's a spin one-half particle. So the first term is just kinetic energy. The second term is a potential energy. So notice that this potential energy equals to dF over d phi squared. And actually, this is a relation that we will see many times later in the course. So the function f that we introduced and which defined for us supersymmetric quantum mechanics is called a superpotential. Okay? So f of phi is a superpotential. Okay? And so you can see in this particular model that whenever you insist, we know already that once we have a supersymmetry, the energy spectrum must be bounded by zero from below, which implies that the potential energy cannot be unbounded. I mean, the potential energy better be positive definite. And so we see that in this supersymmetric quantum mechanics, it simply comes up naturally. Okay, we started with an arbitrary function f of phi, and we found that the potential is always square of the derivative of this function. So this will be a general feature in supersymmetric model. So the third term, sigma 3 is a third Pauli matrix. And so this third term describes an interaction which, in general, non-constant magnetic field. Okay? So this describes with external magnetic field, right? And so that's why, depending whether the spin of the particle is up or down, we have an additional contribution to the energy of the particle. Right. Good. So what we have a Hamiltonian as a differential operator, so we can now solve the Schrodinger equation and find the ground state wave function for this model, right? So, so let's do that. Right, so suppose that omega is a ground state. Okay, so we know that one of the conditions for it to be a ground state, it must be annihilated. It must be annihilated by supercharges. All right. So let's see what kind of Schrodinger equations we will get for the the ground state also has a zero energy. So there are two ways. Let me put in zero here. Ground state wave function. One, I can take the Hamiltonian that we constructed before, much like we do in doing the Schrodinger equation, solving the Schrodinger equation, substitute my two-component wave function, and require that it's an eigenstate of the Hamiltonian with zero energy, right? Normally, in our Schrodinger equation, this is the energy, but we know that the ground state in a supersymmetric model must have zero energy. So we can find the ground state in this way. What I want to point out that if we do this, so this is a standard way, we will get a second order ordinary differential equation in phi, right? So I just lied, right? So it will be a first order, but it will be nonlinear. The differential operator is nonlinear. Okay, so so there is one way to find the ground state wave function. The analogous, what I want to say, if we proceed in this way, so following this step, just to highlight the similarities, well, in this case, it will be a difference, what we will have in general. Following this route in quantum field theory, finding the wave function in this way, or finding the states in this way, will lead to second order in general partial differential equations. So we'll end up solving second order differential equations. Here it's also a second order differential equation, right, guys? Is it clear? Pi squared is a second order differential operator, so I don't know why I was saying. So it's exactly the same in quantum mechanics as what you would get in quantum field theory, because this pi squared, right? Pi squared is minus IH del over del phi squared. So it will be minus H squared del 2 over del phi squared. Okay, so part of the Hamiltonian contains a second derivative. All right, so this is very nice. So that's the same thing that happens in quantum field theories as well. But there is another way, and another way is to actually look for the ground state as a state of the system annihilated by the supercharges. So what do we have? What we will have in this case? So let's look at this condition. So acting on the ground state, right? So we have Q plus is keep track. It's this one, 0 f prime minus I pi, 0, 0, right? And we act on a wave function, okay? And the supercharge must annihilate our ground state wave function. And so what we are finding that we will have f prime minus I pi omega prime, and then this guy is zero. Okay, and so this must be equal to zero. So the condition that this vanishes imply, so Q dagger of omega naught equal to zero. So this is equivalent to this differential equation acted on omega minus of phi equal to 0, omega plus of phi is anything, okay? So now we can do exactly the same. Of course, both conditions must be satisfied, right? The ground state must be annihilated by all the supercharges. So the second condition, Q acted on the ground state, will be F prime plus I pi sigma minus acted on the same wave function, right? And so, yep.
So the bias. Which omega? The W? The W?
Yeah.
It's the same thing that you can ask when you talk about the quantum mechanics. So the wave function is defined on the configuration space of the system. So you must choose a sort of maximal set of commuting parameters on the configuration space, right? Which are x, y, and z. So in this case, it's phi. Great. Good. So in this case, we will have that it's operator acted on 0 omega plus, and it must be equal to 0. And so the condition, our ground state is annihilated by the supercharge Q. So this condition is equivalent to F prime plus I pi acted on omega plus of pi equal to 0, and omega minus of pi is any. All right. So is that clear? Very straightforward algebra. Now, the thing that you see happens is that there, in order to find the ground state wave function in the first example, we had to solve second order differential equation. So here, to find the SUSY ground state, we are solving first order differential equation, right? So of course, the wave function that we find must be annihilated by both superchargers. And actually we have two solutions, right? So one solution is, let me just, before I will be writing down the solution, let's solve those differential equations. They are very easy to solve, right? So let's look at this equation. Right, so I have F prime minus I pi omega minus of phi equal to 0. So I have F prime minus I h bar del over del phi of omega minus I equal to 0. So F prime minus h bar del over del phi of omega minus equal to 0. And so the beautiful thing is that I can solve this differential equation for any function f of phi exactly. Okay, so the solution omega 1 hat of phi is a minus, right, some constant times e to the f of phi divided by h bar. Okay, so that's an exact solution to the differential equation. We can do the same with the other differential equation, okay? And so this will give us the solution with some different integration constant. Okay. A plus. So, so now if we ask the question, can we write down a two-component wave function that will be annihilated, that will be annihilated by both, both superchargers? And the answer is yes, we can. Actually, it's clear that we should get two independent solutions, right? The reason is with two integration constants. The reason is simply that in the other picture, the ground state wave function is a solution of the second order differential equation. So there must be two integration constants there. All right, so, so I will call omega plus this wave function zero, okay? And another wave function, omega minus, I will call as zero omega minus hat, where the hat are the where the hats are the solution. All right. So so if we look Q omega hat, right? So we can see that omega minus for that one must satisfy this equation. But for the capital omega plus, omega minus is zero. So we satisfy this equation, and we satisfy this equation as well, because that simply, that doesn't put any constraint. Okay? So, so this, once I write down the wave function in this form, this zero automatically. And now I have to look, I have to look at annihilation of the other supercharge, the same wave function, and we can see that that leads to the equation which determines omega plus hat, the way that we just solved by solution. Okay, so we explicitly solve that equation, and so we see that in fact the wave, the two-component wave function as I constructed it here, will satisfy, will be annihilated by both superchargers. So the same thing is here, right? So it's a straightforward state. All right. So so of course, as we do in quantum mechanics, we have to pick the physical wave function, and the physical wave function corresponds to normalizable wave functions, right? So what we need that this combination is actually finite, right? So which means that omega plus of phi hat and omega minus one of hat must be normalizable. So that the integral from minus infinity to plus infinity, square d phi, equals to one, and the same for here. So this is exactly as you have in your standard quantum mechanics. Now, whether or not and how many ground states we have, how many actually solutions normalizable, of course, will depend on the property of the superpotential. Okay? So the important conclusion is number of normalizable ground states depend on their properties of f of phi, the superpotential. Okay, so let's just discuss these things briefly. So one possibility that f of phi will go to plus infinity as phi will go to plus minus infinity. Okay. So asymptotically, f of phi is a positive even function of phi. So if this is the case, then omega plus of phi is normalizable but omega minus of phi is non-normalizable so in this case the number we have one ground state. We have one ground state. Two, if f of phi goes to minus infinity, as phi goes to plus or minus infinity, it's still an even function, but it's a negative even function. So in this case, we have omega minus hat of phi normalizable, and omega hat plus of phi non-normalizable. All right, number of ground states. Is one. The third possibility, III, say f of phi goes to minus, phi of phi, as phi goes to, plus infinity. What I want to say is that the superpotential is a superpotential potential is an odd function of phi asymptotically as phi goes to infinity. Right? So in this case, neither of the wave functions that we found is normalizable. So number of ground states is zero. So this is a model in which we have what we called before a spontaneous supersymmetry breaking. So we started with a supersymmetric model, but in this supersymmetric model, we defined a superpotential in such a way that that there is no ground state. Okay? So there So the number of ground states is zero. Notice that this is true even though potential is non-negative. There is no ground state, but remember the potential is always F prime squared. So the potential in any of this model is bounded from below by zero, but in this model there is no ground state, okay? So now I want you to actually understand what we just achieved. We just completely solved any supersymmetric quantum mechanics with any superpotential. So we know, just you give me a superpotential, I will tell you how many ground states it has, and I will tell you whether the supersymmetry is broken or not. Yes, please.
Okay. Can you say that it doesn't have ground state?
Yes.
State zero energy, right? It still be a potentialized minimum. Those are minimum, right?
That it could be, yeah. So we will look at some examples, right? So but so the thing is the vacuum, the ground state is exactly what we think. The vacuum or the ground state of the system is not symmetric. Okay. So there can still be excitations in the model, massive excitations, and for the massive excitations there will be the same number of bosonic and fermionic states in each supersymmetry multiply, but there will be simply no ground state. Okay. So from this perspective we say, as we said before, the supersymmetry is potentially broken.
What about the
supersymmetry
that doesn't have to go to plus or minus infinity, or pretty close to some constant? You
can see that it cannot go to a constant, right? Because we know exactly for any superpotential what the wave function is, right? So the wave function is always plus or minus. The wave function is always f of phi over h, right? There is a plus or minus depending which one you look. So if asymptotically it goes to a constant, then you won't have a square normalizable wave function, right?
Okay, that's not a ground state. That's the same thing as
right. So, but. The question that we are asking is whether the model has a supersymmetric ground state or not. So in reality, you know, and when people talk about realistic supersymmetric models applied to real world, the idea is that we have to look at very light states in this supersymmetric model, right? The assumption is that you know, the massive states are very massive. All right. So is that clear? So we have a complete solution to supersymmetric quantum mechanics. And so what?
I'm just trying to visualize. The solutions are, because if you pick f of phi proportional to the phi square,
yeah,
then that's just the mass, right?
Right. So that's just the mass. Right.
But that means that your wave ground state is a constant.
So it means that there is no supersymmetric ground, which is what you expect. You introduced an explicit mass term in the model.
Yeah.
Right. So whatever the excitations you have, they will be massive. And that's pretty much what the ground state has zero energy. So it's not a surprise that in the model that you mentioned, there will be no supersymmetric ground state. See, we talk about the supersymmetric ground state, the ground state that preserves supersymmetry. But let's go ahead and let's solve some explicit examples. We're going to be doing exactly what you are suggesting right now. So I'm just gonna look at the model which you just said. Okay. So what I want to emphasize before I start doing that was not the fabricated solution. We did not make any approximation whatsoever, and the statements about whether or not the model has a supersymmetric ground state is exact. So now we will do something that people always do in Chokotev quantum field series, right? So we will assume that that how do you I'll just explain this in a sec. How do you do, suppose we have some quantum field theory. How do we discuss quantum field theory perturbative? So the steps that we do, we find minimum energy configuration right. So in particular, this minimum energy configuration can be characterized by the expectation value of some field, right? So for example, if we talk about the model with the spontaneous symmetry breaking, right? So if we talk about a potential of this type, right? V of x. So if we talk about a model like this, so the first thing, let me call it phi here. Phi. So a perturbative quantum field theory, what do we do? We will find out a usually constant condensates, which, so if the condensates are homogeneous, then the minimum of the energy will come just from the minimum of the potential. So what we look for the condensates that minimize our potential energy, right? And so in this, sometimes the condensates are at zero, but in this particular case, the condensate can be at some non-zero value, right? So we can have some non-zero vacuum expectation value that corresponds to the minimum. The property at the minimum, that that the potential, the derivative of the potential, of course, vanishes. And then after we come to this point, right, then we look for small fluctuations, right? So the first step, we find the minimum, usually on a homogeneous field configurations, which leads to lowest possible energy, and then we study perturbatively. Small fluctuations okay, around this minimum. So in other words, we will redefine our field phi as a vacuum expectation value, right, plus some small fluctuation lambda. And what we do, we write down effective field theory for this lambda. That's the basic of all the perturbative computations in quantum field theory. So in particular, the instance we did that, whenever we do any perturbative computation, we will never see this other vacuum. This other vacuum, or this other stable. So in this model, there are two perturbative vacua, but we cannot, sitting in one vacuum, we cannot perturbatively explore the other one. Okay? In order to see the other vacuum, we have to plot the non-perturbative effects. We have to plot tunneling. Alright? So in perturbation theory, will never be able to tell us this. So what we would like to do, we would like to take the supersymmetric quantum mechanics and mimic this ideology, and try to see what a perturbative supersymmetric quantum mechanics would look like. I have to apologize to you because I'm going to change the notation now. I don't even know why that is happening. Why did they do this in the first place? But we go back to our we go back to our Hamiltonian, and I call superpotential W instead of F, and the rest is unchanged. 1/2 H bar sigma 3 W double prime, and so W of phi is superpotential. Okay, so I told you that this is a potential energy. And so what we would like to do, we would like to look at, we would be looking at the supersymmetric ground states. And we know that the supersymmetric ground states must have zero energy. So in particular, the potential energy should vanish, right? And so we will be studying this model. We will be studying this model near points where the derivative of the superpotential vanishes, right? So the potential that corresponds to vanishing of the potential energy. So study the model near phi equals phi naught such that B prime of phi naught equal to zero. Okay. So what I can do a Taylor series expansion V of phi around phi naught. Okay. Now, so the first term, so I'm writing down actually a Taylor series expansion for W prime. So the first term must vanish as phi naught, and the next term. The next term will be phi minus phi naught, okay? And then there is a correction phi naught, phi minus phi naught squared. Okay? So, yes?
Just very new question. So perturbation theory doesn't tell you anything about what this potential does at infinity?
Yes.
So, perturbation theory doesn't tell you anything about whether you have a supersymmetric, whether you have a normalized supersymmetric ground state.
Well, that's because you're making that statement because you know the exact solution. Now, what I'm asking you to do, I'm asking you to forget about the exact solution and repeat the same logic what you would be doing in quantum field theory. I told you what you would be doing in quantum field theory. Unfortunately, in quantum field theory, in the realistic one, we do not have a luxury of noticing this fact. And so the exercise that we are doing right now is trying to mimic what we would do in quantum field theory and see that it will lead us to sometimes wrong answers. But they will be wrong answers in a very deep sense, a very interesting sense. And that will help us understand the issues of instantons and all the fermion numbers that we introduced before, they will pop up here as well. So there will be so that's why I was saying that the supersymmetric quantum mechanics is actually a very good model that will teach us how dangerous it is to do perturbative computation in field theory. See, if we pretend that we only do the same that we do in field theory, there is nothing else we can do. Okay? So we can choose to study the superpotential in the vicinity of some point. And I decided to do it at the point where the derivative of the superpotential vanishes. And my only argument at this stage was, well, you know, that's a potential energy, and the potential energy vanishes. And we know that in supersymmetric ground state, potential energy must be equal to zero.
It's a very basic question that you're asking.
All right. So what I'm going to do. I'm going to redefine a new, so lambda is a constant, right? So I'm going to introduce, there will be a confusion, I will call this x, right? So x is my fluctuation around this point,
And what I'm going to do, I'm going to assume that lambda is a positive number, and to leading order in the perturbation theory, I'm going to forget about this at all. So we're going to neglect. Okay? And so now, Sean, this is exactly what you wanted me to do, right? You wanted me to look at the superpotential that will give rise to a quadratic potential MS. And that's exactly what we're doing right now. So we will change, so this sign, the sign of lambda will be actually important. But we'll discuss carefully the positive choice for lambda. And then I'll just, you know, it will be clear what will happen when lambda is negative. So very good. So let's see what our model will look like, what the Hamiltonian of the system will look like once we take this perturbative approach. So the Hamiltonian of the system was there, and so what we are doing now is we are expanding it and keeping only the leading terms. So the Hamiltonian will take the following form, 1 half p squared. Right, so now I'm defining p is minus I h bar del over del x, which is the same what we call pi before. So there is plus lambda squared x squared over 2. So that's a potential energy piece. And then there is interaction with external magnetic field. And so in this case, once we look at fluctuations around this special point, the magnetic field is a constant. And this magnetic field is actually lambda, right? Because the second derivative, W prime equal to lambda. All right, so I have minus 1/2 h bar sigma 3 times lambda. So this is my Hamiltonian. And what we see that this is just a simple harmonic oscillator, a two-state simple harmonic oscillator with a spin that interacts with a constant magnetic field. So you can also see that the frequency of the harmonic oscillator is just lambda. And I'm not going to solve harmonic oscillator here. I'm just going to write down the solution, right? So we know what the energy spectrum is. So the energy spectrum is going to be h lambda n plus 1/2. This is the energy of the x state. And I will put plus minus here as well, you will see in a second, because the eigenspins here will have either a plus spin on or a spin pointing up or down, and that will correspond either to positive or negative eigenvalue sigma 3. And because of the interaction with the magnetic field, there will be correction to the energy, and this correction will be 1/2 h bar lambda. Right. So, as I said, this is just simple harmonic oscillator, and this term is spin interaction. With a constant. And then here. All right. So what do we have? Well, we can actually build the spectrum of this state and discuss it. So let's see what will happen. So there are two types of states. There are two types of states that I can construct. I will call it plus state. Those are the states which have a wave function like this. Something that we know from the exact treatment of quantum mechanics. And the state of this type. Okay? So why do I break this into these two states? So what I'm going to show now is that these states have a nice, well-defined fermion number. Have a well-defined fermion number. All right, so here I want to remind you that we have this matrix representation of A and A dagger. Okay. So what's happening is that if you take A dagger, and if you act it on a plus state, it will vanish. A acted on a minus state, it will vanish. And our fermion number F was just A dagger A, right? So minus one to the F acted on a plus state will be minus A dagger A acted on a plus state. And that gives us minus to the power of plus one acted on a plus state, which is minus plus state. So the fermion number of the plus state is minus one. So that's why I'm going to call these states fermionic states. So this is a fermionic state. Now I can evaluate the fermion number of the minus state. So the fermion number of the minus state, minus F acted on the minus state, minus A dagger A acted on the minus state. Now, A annihilates the minus state. And so it will be minus to the zeroth power acted on the minus state, so it will be plus. So the minus states actually have a positive fermion number, and I will call them bosonic states. Now, the energy of the nth minus state will have two contributions. So this is fermionic state. There will be a standard contribution, h bar lambda, n plus 1/2, which comes from a simple harmonic oscillator. And then there is minus 1/2, lambda h bar times the eigenvalue of the sigma 3, right? So the minus I really wanted to talk first about the fermionic states. So the fermionic states have a positive sigma 3 eigenvalue, so that's why it's going to be plus 1, right? Is that clear? So for the fermionic states, the spectrum will be h bar lambda n, and n goes 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, and so on. Now, for the nth bosonic state, so this is bosonic. So what do we have? We have the same contribution from a simple harmonic oscillator, minus 1/2 lambda h bar times the eigenvalue under sigma 3, and that's minus. So that leads us to h bar lambda, and then here I have n plus 1. And n again runs from 0, 1, 2, 3, and so on. So we have a very beautiful picture of the spectrum of this theory group. So we see that all the states, all the eigenstates of the Hamiltonian in this model break into two groups, a fermionic state and a bosonic state. And spectrum looks very nice. Minus 1 to the f. So here I have energy in units of h bar lambda, 0, 1, 2, 3, and 4. This is minus 1, this is plus 1. So we have a fermionic state and bosonic state, and we can see that there is actually a zero energy state in the fermionic sector, right? And then all the states, it extends to plus infinity. Now, in the bosonic state, what happens is this, right? Okay, so this is a spectrum. This is a spectrum of the theory. And now, if we start expanding to higher orders in lambda, that will be interactions between these different energy levels. But this will be our primary, you know, this will be our starting point to develop perturbation theory. What I want to point out is that there is always pairing between bosonic and fermionic states at each massive level. Okay, at each massive level, there is one bosonic state and there is one fermionic state. And this is what we've seen at the last lecture. The massive representation of the supersymmetry algebra is doubly degenerate. Okay, and we also noticed that the ground state provides a trivial representation of the supersymmetry algebra, and it can have any fermionic number. Okay, so in this particular case, we see that the ground state is fermionic. Okay, now I want to ask you, what do you think will happen if I change lambda to be negative? What will happen?
Yeah. Ground state will be bosonic.
Yeah. So the only thing that will happen is that this sign. So I would now have to put an absolute value here, and if I put an absolute value here, I would have to change the sign here. And so what will happen is that in this case, as you just said, absolutely correct, we will have exactly the same spectrum here over h bar absolute value of lambda. And so the fermionic state will be massive, and the bosonic state will be a ground state. So this again confirms with our previous expectations that the ground state can have either fermion number. So what we showed with you, a following tricky thing, that you give me a superpotential. So let me just write down explicitly what we showed. So we showed perturbatively for any solution to W prime of phi equal to 0. So that's some equation on the superpotential. For any solution, there is a SUSY ground state, which is bosonic fermionic, depending on the sign of the second derivative at that point of the superpotential. Okay? Now you already can smell the trouble, because
we discussed before that at most there can be two ground states, right? Two supersymmetric ground states. If it would be some accident that both wave functions are omega hat plus and omega hat minus are normalizable. And here, what we are saying is that in principle, there can be arbitrary many supersymmetric ground states. Just to emphasize this point, let's look at this example. So let's look at the example. We'll look at the model where superpotential has the following form. So I have phi to the fourth. Now I am specifying explicitly the superpotential plus subleading corrections. Okay, so our superpotential is a polynomial, and I'm not writing down subleading correction. They are not important for large phi. Okay? Good. So it's a fourth order polynomial. Then if I look at this, phi prime phi, this is third order polynomial. And actually when I have a lot of pictures, if I can have, I'll try to keep this black of pictures. So suppose that my superpotential is something like this. So some fourth order polynomial of this type. So here I have phi, here I have w of phi. And so generically, there will be three points at which the superpotential is extremum. Okay, so those are three points, 1, 2, and 3. And so if I now plot what my potential will look like, so potential is proportional to the derivative of the superpotential squared as a function of phi, so the potential will vanish at these points, okay, and it will be positive everywhere else. So it will be like this. Alright? So this is our potential, and we just studied each of these extrema perturbatively, the minimum of this potential, and we found that each of them corresponds to a ground state, right? So, this guy has lambda negative, this guy has lambda positive, and this guy has lambda positive. Of course, they are different values of lambda. I don't know, lambda 1, lambda 2, and lambda 3. So we will have oscillators of different frequency in principle, but and they are this side. So our perturbative analysis, then tell us that we have three supersymmetric ground state. So this guy will be fermionic. This fermionic ground state, this is bosonic. And this one is fermionic again. Okay?
I don't know if it's that important, but I'm pretty sure that the potential, the derivative should be negative, then positive, and negative.
What?
Yeah, the derivative should be negative on the other side, then positive, and negative, and positive, right?
So this second derivative is positive here, right? For the double mix.
Yeah.
So that's why lambda is positive.
No, that's right. It's just the derivative of W is negative.
That's correct, but the potential is a square.
Oh, sorry.
Great. No, it's okay.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
So the potential in any supersymmetric model, the potential is always a square of something. So it's always possible. Okay? So just extending our perturbative analysis, we seem to have three ground states. And we know that exact non-perturbatively what happens here is that our potential, our superpotential is a positive even function, and so that that leads to the fact that omega plus hat of phi is normalizable. And so non-perturbatively, and that was a fermionic ground state, so non-perturbatively, there is a single unique, moreover, we can say more precisely, single unique fermionic ground state. Okay. So it looks like that when we do this perturbative computation, we get an extra pair of states. What I want to show, so there is a big difference already, right? So you know that the answer you get here is completely wrong. But there are some things that work out correctly. And so some of you might have heard that there are topological properties of your theory that are independent whether you do analysis perturbatively or non-perturbatively. And one of such properties is a Witten index. So it's the index that counts the relative number of bosonic and fermionic ground states. So Witten index, and now I will show you how it is defined, and we will see that despite the fact that we have completely different predictions about the structure, the spectrum of the model, perturbatively and non-perturbatively, that thing stays finite, and it stays unchanged. So the Witten index, the non-regularized Witten index, normally people regularize it by, for example, you can regularize it by introducing this, by introducing a Hamiltonian, right? So we can call this to be Witten index. Okay, you will see in a second why I introduce this. So the trace is over the whole Hilbert space. Okay, and so in order to compute the Witten index, I will use the limit beta goes to plus infinity. So the energy is always positive, so e to the minus beta h is actually a suppression factor, and higher energy levels will be suppressed more and more. But non-regularized Witten index is just trace over the Hilbert space of minus 1 to 0. So let's suppose we sit in one of the perturbative vacuum. So let's look at vacuum 1, right? So at vacuum 1, we have a fermionic ground state. So trace of minus 1 to the F, right, for the vacuum 1, okay? So when we do computations perturbatively, we have to do summation over vacuums, right? But I compute the trace in each vacuum separately and then simply add trace. So in vacuum 1, I have the ground state is fermionic, so I have minus 1 from the ground state. From the first exciting state, I have one fermionic state, I have one bosonic state. From the second state, I have minus 1, plus 1, and so on. They will always come in pairs. So you can see that this regularization e to the minus beta h is really, so normally this infinite sum is not well defined, but once I introduce e to the minus beta h, then it will be just the energy of the first level, energy of the second level, and so on. So this will be well defined, and so it will be minus 1. So the trace, the Witten index on a fermionic
on a fermionic vacuum is minus 1. The weaker index on a perturbative bosonic vacuum is also is actually plus 1. So the total weaker index here in this model trace 1 plus 2 plus 3 of minus 1 to the f is going to be minus 1 plus 1 minus 1 equals to minus 1. So that's weakened index computed non-perturbatively, but we can do computational, perturbatively. We can now compute the weakened index non-perturbatively, and we will get the same number. So it's minus 1. So what we will see, we will discuss next time. Well, first of all, next time we discuss what happens with these two additional states, and that would correspond to, we will outline instanton computation in supersymmetric quantum mechanics. And what we will argue that tunneling in this, which is a non-perturbative effect in the supersymmetric quantum mechanics, will mix together two of the states. It will mix exactly bosonic and fermionic states and give them a small non-perturbative energy. The energy, so in other words, the bosonic state and the fermionic state will form a massive supersymmetry multiplet, okay, will be lifted up in a spectrum, and their energy will be some number divided by h bar. So it will be non-perturbative, they will have non-perturbative energy in h bar, and that's why during perturbation theory you will never see this effect. Okay? So we'll discuss this next time. And actually this is also explain you why the weakened index doesn't change. Because if you lift the supersymmetry multiplet, it has exactly the same number of bosonic and fermionic states at the same energy level. So the weakened index evaluated on a supersymmetry multiplet is zero. So once you change the energy of the multiplet, it doesn't change the index. That's why the index stays the same, going non-perturbative from perturbative to non-perturbative. All right, guys, see you next week.